you're down and troubled and you need some love and care and nothing is going right.
So, have you ever felt that nothing is going right? Well, cheer up. From Los Angeles, a big L.A. welcome to all my listeners out there in Radioland. I am Dave, the caregiver's caregiver, coming to you live globally through the famous worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. Yes, folks, I'm the guy who's going to help guide you through this very difficult journey called caregiving. And we're going to do our very best to help you avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout. Ow. We have an exciting show planned for you today. Jane Braunham, owner of Preferred Care at Home in Santa Clarita, California, and how to survive caregiving with the help that she offers to her caregivers. So stay tuned. I am your host today, Dave Nassani, and this show is to caregivers of every kind. And the one thing we know about caregivers is that they are caring, selfless, sacrificial, and are very prone to burnout because they tend to put everyone else's needs above their own. Folks, learn a lesson from the airlines. As I always say at the beginning of my show, remember every time you board a plane, you tune them out. When they tell you that if there's an emergency, to put your own oxygen mask on first before you help your child with their mask. And the reason is because they know that you will most likely black out if you don't put your needs above theirs. And then you won't be of any help to anybody. And caregivers are the same way. We also talk about grief and loss here, and the devastating effects that it can have on us. It automatically throws us into this thing called the grief process. Ouch. Unfortunately, folks, the only way out of the grief process is to go through the grief process. And hopefully we can help you through your grief and loss if you happen to feel like you're stuck. If this is the first time tuning in, you can learn more about me and my radio podcast, my books, my videos, going to my website, davenass.com. That's Dave, and then the first four letters of my last name, N like Nancy, A like Apple, S like Sam, Nass, davenass.com. And the name of the show works also, davethecaregiverscaregiver.com. And if you just tell me your name and email, guess what I'm going to do for you? I'm going to send you a really neat gift. First, I'm going to send you a copy of my book, One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships in ebook format. And if that wasn't enough, I'm going to throw in a free report entitled 10 Mistakes That All Caregivers Make That You Shouldn't. Now, don't miss out on these cool freebies worth over, gosh, I don't know, $20. All right, enough of that. Welcome to the show, Jane. Sorry you had to sit through all of that introduction stuff for all our first-time listeners. Are you there?
Yes, good morning. It is important to know who you are and hear the introduction for any new listeners checking in. And I was so touched by listening to the last radio show done on grief. My first instinct was, wow, there are so many people that need this. Who can I share this with immediately? And as I'm listening to it, the tears started to flow because I realized I needed it myself as a caregiver for so many years, for so many people. I also need it to take care of myself so that I have energy to care for those that look up to me and trust me and depend on me to keep them going.
Wow, Jane, you're so sweet. Thank you. And I didn't pay you to say that, right?
Not at all. That's in me. You couldn't pay me enough to say what you wanted me to.
Yeah, you know, you're right. That show I did last week, Dr. Todd, is one of the most listened to shows I've done. The ratings just went through the roof on that show. He's very, very knowledgeable and very informed. And I think I'm going to have him back because of his popularity. So, Jane, let's get back to you. Why don't you take a moment and introduce yourself? Tell us what you do and who you are and how you got into this field.
I'm the owner of Preferred Care at Home, located in Valencia. I can see Magic Mountain from my office, so it's an easy location for others to come to meet with me. But the majority of my passion and where I spend my time is in my client's home. I love that part of what I can do. and very hands-on in whatever they need to stay at home where most people wish to be. I'm very creative in finding resources to make it happen for those who desire it to happen.
Wow, that's really neat. You know, for those of you who don't know, I am a caregiver also, obviously. My wife had a stroke 20 years ago, almost 20 years ago, and she lost her speech, and she's paralyzed on her right side. So when we got out of the hospital, you know, they came to the house and actually looked around and saw all of the different things that we needed, because we lived in Burbank at the time in a two-story house, and so there were a lot of challenges. And it was very depressing for her when she came back home and saw all of the things that she could not do. So it was very helpful to have someone in there and say, okay, we need to put a ramp here, we need grab bars here, we need to do this, we need to do that. So what type of in-home care services do you offer that helps the caregivers kind of cope to their new environment when they come out of the hospital? I should say their caregivers' loved ones. Do you actually, you know, how involved do you get in that? Go ahead.
I go to the home, and because of my extensive experience in many areas of nursing and my life experience, it's very easy for me to walk in any home and basically triage the most pressing need of the day and make it happen and figure out problem solving for what needs to happen that day, and to find the caregiver that is the correct fit for this family. And if they need a few hours a day or whether they need around-the-clock care. It is unusual that someone really needs hourly care. Yes, they may need it at times for respite, but often my perspective is that it is not a healthy thing to have somebody having to take care of you around the clock. It makes the person feel sicker. It is better to have them strive for independence and have the family have some privacy and not have care around the clock. It changes that dynamic.
I totally agree. When, you know, it depends on the personality of of the spouse. For example, when my wife came home, her mother actually was living with us as well, and her mother and I were kind of sharing caregiving responsibilities, and I'm totally different in my personality and temperament as she is, but we're probably opposites. And so I'm always thinking therapeutic, you know, occupational therapy and this and that. And so, for example, if my wife was in her wheelchair and she's trying to reach something on a high cabinet, you know, I will encourage her as she's standing up in her chair, you know, holding on. And she's, you're almost there. Come on, reach. Just stand on your toes a little bit. Whereas my mother would say, oh, here, honey, let me get that for you. You know, and obviously, I was told by occupational therapists that the way I do it would encourage them to be more independent and would become more independent quickly, rather the other one, it's like, well, why do I have to try? I'll just ask her and she'll get it for me. Would you agree?
I am very strong on pushing others beyond what they think their limits are, recognizing that if you provide opportunities to give them value, to have them work for what they get, for what they do, it changes their thinking, because we're not defined by a diagnosis on our medical record. We're not defined by the circumstances we find ourselves. It's what we see that we have that we can do. If we have a voice, we can work. If we can hear, we can work. If we can see, we can work. Everyone needs to feel that value of producing and not the helplessness of always being dependent on someone, because no one needs to feel that helpless.
Jane, you're so passionate and positive. I can just hear it in your voice. You just really love doing this, don't you?
Yes.
You know, there's nothing more depressing than a person who's been disabled and realizes that they need a caregiver now to start feeling, oh my gosh, you know, I'm dependent on these people, and they might have been very independent like my wife was. And depression, you know, can lead to suicide. So it's very important that whoever is involved in this, like your company, is a very positive person, the glass is half full, because it's so easy to just look at all this and say, oh my gosh, it's just too overwhelming. How can I do this? There's no way. But I just hear it in your voice, just the optimistic, positive nature of this. Let me ask you a question. From your experience, what percentage of the caregivers out there in the country are personal caregivers, you know, like a spouse, a family, a friend, or this, you know, someone that is close to them? And what percentage are they, like your company, where you actually place professional caregivers in the home? What would you say if you had to guess?
I think probably almost one out of two people you meet in any given day have someone they are taking care of at home, whether it be a child that has been having challenges all their life, may not be able to hold a job down and trying to figure out how to sort that situation out, to relatives, and it could be a spouse, it could be aunts, uncles, grandparents. I think it impacts far greater than most of us realize. And I think most of the time, if family comes together and you have somebody that's very strong with advocacy, you can get the family united, each one taking their part of what they're capable of, and minimize in-home caregivers. Because when you bring in-home caregivers, yes, they are respite. Yes, they come alongside of you. But a family also needs privacy, so it is not good to always have outsiders as they see it come in. Because when you pay for care, part of you dies every time you need that. No one dies from not getting bathed. But when we strip people of the inability to take care of themselves and make the decisions of how they want that care done, we take away their hope.
Yeah,
you
so
have
true.
To have hope. And if you cannot inspire hope, if you cannot inspire passion, what else is there?
Absolutely. You know, the Bible says, without hope, the people perish. And I think of the Nazi prisoner of war concentration camps. I don't know how those people kept up their hope, because it seemed like a hopeless situation. But yet today, we have many, many survivors of those camps. And it was all because of hope. So hope is very important. Let me ask you, excuse me, what is the most common response that you get from caregivers who find out about your service, maybe for the first time? It's like, oh my gosh, you mean I can actually get some help?
Part of it is the shocking realization that the thing that is needed the most to stay out of the hospital and remain in home is not covered by their insurance, let's say Medicare. It is something people have to pay out of pocket for, or sometimes they have already applied for veterans benefits. Sometimes long-term insurance plans, but the majority, it is out of pocket, and it is unplanned for and unexpected. So often it is an angry response that they've worked all their life, and what do you mean this is not covered by Medicare?
Yeah. Wow, yeah. That is so true. But I would guess that once they find out that there is help, even if they have to pay for it, I mean, there's different things that you can do, like maybe on weekends come by so that they can at least, you know, recharge their batteries so that they can be refreshed by the beginning of the next week, stuff like that. So I call that the Plan B caregiver. Did a whole show on that. What do you think of that?
I didn't watch the show. I apologize, but I strongly believe that anyone that is a family caregiver that is needing help a percentage of the day, there needs to be a Plan B in place, because the biggest problem is when there is not, you as a family caregiver hit the emergency room. Now, whoever you're caring for is in crisis and they don't qualify for admission to the hospital. So what is your backup plan? That is critical to also being able to take the elephant off your chest of the 24/7 responsibility. It is, I have something in place, where sometimes even 4 hours a week can make a difference in your life to be able to keep going, to know you have that in place, and to know that you can have more hours when you may need them, but you have it ready to go.
Yeah, it's so true. And I you don't have to apologize for not listening to my show. I didn't really expect you to listen to any of my shows, but I was impressed that you at least listened to the last one. Thank you. But we had a show where a mother called in. Actually, she was an elderly woman whose husband just died, and she was his caregiver. And he was a big guy, and she was just this little thing. And she was always having to figure out, you know, when he would fall out of his chair, she'd have to call 911 because she wasn't strong enough to put him back in. And she's always lugging these wheelchairs in and out of her trunk. And I felt so sorry for her every time I saw her. And I says, "Oh, you poor thing." He says, "You know, you need to take a break." "Oh, I'm okay. I'm okay." So she actually called in on one of our shows, and she says that her time as a caregiver to her husband wasn't really an issue, which I disagree because it sure looked like an issue. But she said more of an issue was when she was much younger, a younger mom, and she was raising three boys all by herself. Her husband was always at work, and she just cried every day because she needed a break. And she would have given anything for someone to just pick up the phone and say, "Can I come over there and just be with your child for, oh, I don't know, 15 minutes so you can go to Starbucks and have a coffee." She says, "That would have meant the world to me." And, you know, these class of caregivers, like young moms of young children and maybe even special needs children, they're so overlooked. It's like, well, they're mothers. They signed up for this. You know, do your job. What's the problem? What's your response to that?
I can totally relate. When my son was so colicky and so intense, it was around the clock. And yes, I, as a mother, I definitely felt that way. And when he was just an infant, we moved into a new neighborhood. I didn't know anyone, didn't know if I could trust anyone to take care of him. Totally understand how that mother felt. And yes, it is overlooked, and especially mothers of special needs. Where is their respite? Where is their team coming alongside of them to help them?
Right. Well, we're going to take a two-minute break, Jane, and when we come back, we'll talk about the cost of this. How much does it really cost to put a caregiver in a home and some of the different options? And then we'll talk further about maybe some plans out there that can compensate the cost or even eliminate it. So we'll be right back.
One arm, one leg, 100 words. Overcoming unbelievable hardships. Available on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. Hear what Lynn Barrington, best-selling author of Daddies and Daughters, published by Simon & Schuster, has to say about it. You think you have it bad? Read this book. This is a beautiful, genuine story told from the heart. It's inspiring and easy to read. When you finish this book, you will be able to look at your concerns in a new light. How about the reaction of 9-time Grammy Award winner, the godfather of contemporary gospel music, Andre Crouch? This book will be an encouragement to anyone who reads it. Charlene just won't let the promises of God go. She's hanging on to her positive, godly attitude, and I look forward to the day when she will receive all that she's believing that God will do for her. In the meantime, she has not let her circumstances get in the way of her faith. Her smile has gotten just as big as it was before her stroke. She's not just a survivor, she's more than a conqueror, as the Bible states. I'm glad to know her and her testimony. Read this book. You will be encouraged regardless of what you're going through. So get your copy of One Arm, One Leg, and 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships today on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. But if you purchased it from the author's website, Dave and Charlene Nassani will personally autograph your own copy. Just go to DaveNass.com. That's Dave, and then N like Nancy, A like Apple, S like Sam, S like Sam.com. DaveNass.com. Oh, and while you're on his website, don't forget to leave your name and email address so that Dave can send you his free report, 10 Mistakes All Caregivers Make That You Shouldn't, just for visiting the site. There are a lot of resources, videos, and links to his radio podcast. Again, DaveNass.com. That's N-A-S-S. Now let's rejoin Dave Nassani and his guest on Dave the Caregiver's Caregiver Program on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network.
My name out loud.
And we are back. And Jane, we're talking to Jane. And she is the owner of, oh my gosh, where are you, Jane?
Preferred Care and Home.
Tell us who you are, Jane, for those that just tuned in.
Jane Branham, RN, Preferred Care at Home of Santa Clarita.
Yes, I shirked my responsibility of the guest always having that information right in front of him. So, Jane, we were talking for the audience who just tuned in, you know, about her services of in-home care and how they help and how they can be of help coming alongside to existing caregivers and family caregivers. But I want to ask her about the cost now, and because there's a lot of people out there, and they're all basically the same, but Jane's company is different, and I just want to give her an opportunity to explain how she's different and why she's different, and just how expensive is home in-home care, and are there options for those who cannot afford it, et cetera. Go ahead, Jane.
Yes, I think the number one question is, what are you willing to pay to keep your sanity? And then what I offer is something no one, you can't get anywhere else, because my heart, my passion, my motivation to provide caregivers and provide care for your family is outstanding. And what I also offer is unscheduled visits to my client's home when a caregiver is working, because I need to know that my caregiver's safe. I need to know the client's safe. I need to know that the caregiver is doing what she's been hired to do. And then I'm also there for education. Has there been changes? Does the client need to go to the doctor before they end up back in the hospital? Let's say they have heart failure. I noticed a week ago they could walk halfway across the room without getting short of breath. Today, I notice they stand up, they're severely short of breath. They need to get to the doctor to prevent a hospital readmission. So that is something I bring as a niche for my business, is being able to see that person needs to get to the doctor to really cut the cost of hospital readmission.
Yeah, Jane, you sound like a great business person, as I am a business person, because business people have to know what's going on. I mean, I've got a gas station. I've got videos that I can see at home, so I can see what's going on at work when I'm not there. And we have mystery shoppers that shop our gas station, our convenience store, to see, you know, how are people treated when the boss isn't there. And that's an excellent thing, to just have unscheduled visits. And I know we've used some services, and I've never heard of anybody doing that. So that makes you different just right off the bat.
Yes, I realize now. I've had previous employers tell me I beat to a different drum. I used to think that was a negative thing because it was given as part of a negative evaluation. Now I realize, no, that makes me outstanding in what I have to offer my clients.
Well, yeah, and especially, you know, we like to watch the Food Channel, and there's some new shows on there where they hire a guy to put cameras in the restaurant to see what all of the waiters and servers do when they're not there, and it's just shocking. So just the fact that people know that they can be walked in on any time, you know, or a police officer, they say, just his presence stops crime because people can see them and so on. So that is a good thing, and I'm very pleased to hear that. You know, I have a mother who is in the beginning stages of dementia, and so she gets confused easily and she gets forgetful. And she was in independent living, and that just wasn't working out. She was in there too long because there were problems and issues that we were just hoping would go away, but they didn't go away. They got worse. And then one day she fell and she had broken a tiny little bone near her pelvis. So she was taken to the hospital and then to a nursing home. And that was a great excuse to get her out of independent living and in a nursing home where she really belonged. And then as she healed, This particular nursing home did have a dementia ward on it, but they found that she wasn't bad enough to need that, and so she was actually promoted to assisted living, where she is now in Glendale. And so she's doing very well there, and she's in great care. So we're just so appreciative of the services that are out there. So let me ask you, what percentage of the time do you find that long-term care insurance policies have been actually purchased by the care receiver? Now, I'm one of the smart people. I bought my long care policy in my 40s when it's really cheap and inexpensive, because if anything happens to me, you know, I don't want to be a burden to my family. I have a policy that my family can put me in a very nice facility, and it's all paid for. So I'm just curious what you found out there. Do you run into a lot of long-term care policies that will pay for your services?
I find that so many don't even know they have them, and often even if they've had another agency in there providing caregivers, they are not even aware of it because no one's asked them. When I do an admission, I go through options for care and have them search for, has there been any type of long-term insurance policies? What type of life insurance do you have? Because there's so many options even with that today. Have you investigated any type of veteran benefits? I mean, the list is quite extensive. There's 22 things on my list that I go through about exploring how you can pay for care. And then also I offer them to download my app on their smartphone, because I'm constantly putting new resources on there and helping them to understand, to advocate for their loved one and keep seeking to do what's best for them.
That's right. The rules are just extensive. There's no way one person can keep up with them. For example, when we were looking for a place for my mother, we discovered that simply because her husband, who had died, was a veteran, that she was eligible for like a $1,000 or $1,200, I can't remember exactly, grant that would go toward assisted living. And, I mean, who's going to tell you that? You know what I mean? So that's a great service.
I am the type of person that tells you, because I go through all the resources that are available to them, and I tell them what is the safest option for care right now. And it's just, they can see that I am knowledgeable and know what's going on, and I will talk to them about what's safest, but I cannot make the choice for them. I only offer them the advice that they're asking for. When I come to the home, I do free evaluations. I do a lot of education. And sometimes, you know, they cannot afford to sign up for care, but if they need the help and they have questions, I really express to them, call me, I will help you. Some, you know, have never paid me a dime, never will, but that's not the point of it. My focus is education to whoever I encounter, clients, families, caregivers, you know, spend time with helping them to learn to take care of themselves or helping them to find their resources. I am very much into guiding, supporting, advocating.
Well, folks, I know this sounds like a commercial for Jane and her company, but I've done my research, and that's why she's on the show, because as far as I'm concerned, she's the person to call if you ever need anything of her services. Now, Jane, I want to ask you, when do you actually know that a loved one, because like I said, we kept our mother in her independent living way too long, and it was starting to get unsafe for her. But it's so hard to make the change, you know, and it was like when she got into her last automobile accident, she hit the gas pedal, she hit the gas pedal when she thought she was hitting the brake, and thank God nobody was killed. But it was so hard to get her to stop driving. This is such a common thing, you know, people don't want to give up their cars, they don't want to give up their homes, but sometimes it has to be done, and unfortunately, it usually isn't done until there's a big problem and an accident in the car, or there's a fall and now she's in the hospital. So when do you know, what's the best time that a loved one should be moving their, or a caregiver should be moving their loved one into an independent from a home, or maybe an assisted living or a nursing home, or palliative care or hospice care? And you know, that's a loaded question, so go ahead and take as much time as you need on that one.
You know, I know that it depends on their resources. I'm very strong at keeping somebody in their home until they take their last breath. But it's definitely up to the person. If that's what they desire, I will do everything I can to make that happen for them. In some situations, the resources are not realistic to be able to hire in-home caregivers to stay independently in your home. So then when you look at safety, safety is paramount in knowing where a person needs to go. You look at boarding cares when you're talking about you don't have the resources to keep somebody at home. There's usually six people in a boarding care and one caregiver always there. And it's more of an environment where if I'm the client, I'm very much not wanting a lot of activity as far as programs and abilities to go and do. It's more when you need total care. And then when you go to an assisted living, that really appeals to me because I know that I'm going to be, you know, dancing by the time I take my last breath. So I need a lot of options and activity. I don't know if I'll be able to stay at home because then if I'm alone, I'm really not into that. So it really is about who you are as a person. Do you want a lot of options for activities and programs and crafts and things like that? Because assisted living has a plethora of programs for you and interaction. So it's more if you prefer to be more eccentric and stay at home, or if you're really sick, you certainly don't have a desire to be going to all that. So it's really up to resources and who you are and what you desire. We really need to look at what a person desires. Treat somebody like you would your best friend. What is it that they want to do? Do they want to stay at home? What is their personality? Would they prefer to be in an assisted living where there's so many activities and options to do to keep them busy? It's who they are as a person. What is their desire? Try to meet that with whatever resources you have. And moving to an assisted living means that you really live independently and have neighbors rake so many down the hall. It doesn't mean that you have someone there taking care of you. It's just know what is available to you, and what you get for the basic room fee is your room, is being able to go to a community dining room. It is being able to call for help, but understand what the staffing is compared to like a boarding care or even more a skilled nursing facility. It's just there are different levels, and ask the questions of the staffing ratio compared to what the needs of your loved one that you're advocating for.
Yeah. In the case of my mother, and I'll keep using her as an example because she's fresh in my mind, my sister was working at NBC, so she could not, you know, provide the needed care that she needed. I have my own wife who's I'm providing care for, so, you know, we really couldn't be actively involved in allowing her to stay in her home. Her sister had moved in with her, but then they started fighting and bickering among each other because her sister doesn't realize and understand, even to this day, you know, what it means to have dementia. You know, she would just get upset with my mother because, well, why can't you remember these things? You know, well, how could you do that? You know, and it wasn't healthy for them to be together anymore. And which is sad because having a sister living with you could be a great asset in staying in the home, but it just didn't work out with her. So they've both got different rooms in an independent living place. And my sister had discovered that if, you know, my mother didn't have much, but by putting all of her assets into my sister's name, because my sister was caring for her anyway financially, that she qualified for Medicare. And Medicare then was able to pay for things that they wouldn't normally pay for because you have to qualify. Explain what you know about Medicare and the rules and all of that stuff.
It is a very big challenge for people when they're trying to sort out what's best for their loved one. Medicare mm-hmm. is what you have because of your age. basically it's Medicare is everyone that's over 65, let's say. I don't have the exact number. But
right.
what I think you're referring to is qualifying for Medi-Cal. And when you
that's
have Medi-Cal,
yes,
then that
yes.
opens your options.
Right, right, right.
And sometimes if you are at the income level where you need more help and you also have the medical need, then a family member also applies for what's called in-home supportive services. And that
right.
is provided. It's not a given that you get it approved because you have Medi-Cal, but it's pretty close to that, that you would. And that is just a process where you go through and fill out the paperwork, and they have a medical need and a financial need, and that does provide. But sometimes it's knowing about the resources, and every little bit helps to make it work. But every family that I've ever met in my life has family dynamics that you have to look at also what is healthy and what is going to work. And it is a strong person that says, the situation is not working, I need help, and what other resources are there, instead of keeping their loved one in a situation that is not good and not in their best interest. So that's a great thing where you
right.
were able to do that in your family.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you're very, very knowledgeable about the options to just kind of make it happen, you know. And so that's an added asset in using your company over others. And so and we really have about 40 minutes left, no, 20 minutes left of the show. And so I know this is a big topic on dementia, and I just want to touch maybe for the next 20 minutes. Tell me about dementia and Alzheimer's care, because that can be very, very expensive. I know there are some facilities that have their own dementia ward. My mother's in a place that does not, in assisted living. And so there's different levels of care for this type of disease and different costs of each and possible programs. But getting back to you, do you have a lot of patients and caregivers who have dementia people in the home? I'm sure you do. And what kind of challenges is a dementia patient versus a stroke patient or an autistic child, et cetera? I'm sure it comes with its own set of issues.
Yes, I think the biggest need is the education of how to handle it. So many times I go in a home and I observe a family member coming in, and their demand of the person that struggles with dementia to say their name and remember who they are. And it saddens me, because what they really need to do is to just have a photo album with the pictures of who different people are and how
right.
they're related to him, and introduce yourself is, I am Susie, I am your daughter. And instead of escalating the situation and trying to force someone to say who you are, that part of their brain is no longer working. I believe they don't forget the essence of who you are. They know who you are. But to try to force them to say something when their brain cannot do it only agitates, it only makes them worse. It only makes them feel less than.
Right. In the case of my mother's sister getting so irritated with my mother, I think what was really going on is my sister, or my mother's sister, was deathly afraid of becoming like that. And so it was a defense mechanism. And she says, oh, my gosh, if that could happen to you, that means it can happen to me. And so she was in heavy-duty denial about it. But with my mother and her room, she has a very nice room. We just put pictures of family all over the room. And she always calls her room, because, you know, sometimes she can't remember where she lives. She says, well, I want to go back to that place with all the pictures in my room. And so we have pictures of different times. I read somewhere that, you know, as a person's mind progresses with the disease, that their mind actually gets younger and younger and younger. And it's not that they can't remember who you are, or they can't remember who their spouse is. It's just that now perhaps they remember them when they were 20 years old. And this 80-year-old person, who's bald and fat and you know, whatever, doesn't even look like the 20-year-old person who is now in their mind who they married. And so sometimes they discovered that if their back is to the person and the person is speaking, they know who they are because they recognize their voice. But when they turn around and they say, well, who are you? You know, so it's an interesting thing. And they also talk about just enjoying moments. You know, if you can enjoy a five-minute moment, you know, where all of a sudden they connect and you say, hey, remember when this happened, you know, and we had this, and then, oh, yes, I remember that. And they have a great laugh. You just had a moment, and then it's gone, you know, and just learn to enjoy those moments. What do you think of that?
I think that's just beautifully and well said. And if only everyone in the home with a spouse that has the same disease, if only they could understand that concept. I mean, in the last 5 minutes of what we discussed, if they could only grasp that concept, the battle would be so much less, especially during the sundowning time. They have to realize the person's struggling with dementia. Their brain is being controlled by it, especially in the evening, not to personalize it, not to force them to try to do things they don't want to do, diffuse. Learn that you can't pick your fights in the evening because they're not going to handle it and they cannot process it. And you don't personalize things. Often when they're so out of control in the evening is because they're terrified themselves. So do things that soothe them, whether it be listening to music, dancing, doing some type of artwork, whatever it is that soothes them, swimming, anything, walking outside, anything to distract them, anything to bring down the anxiety level instead of trying to force them to do something you think they might need to do. If that, those evening hours that are the most challenging in most homes, if we refocus and get the help we need, if you have those 5 hours, 4 hours in a 24-hour period, it can make a difference with them being able to stay at home, able to sleep at night, able to cope with the long-term aspect of it. Those are the critical hours. Often people need help.
Wow. Listen, we're going to take a two-minute break, and we'll talk a little more about this when we come back. So we'll be right back.
Tune in to Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver program, every Saturday at 3:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, only on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. The whole purpose of this show is to help support you in your caregiving responsibilities so that you take care of yourself first, so that you don't burn out, because your loved ones are counting on you to take care of them. And Dave Nassani should know. He's been a caregiver to his wife for over 19 years. After she suffered a debilitating stroke that left her severely speech-impaired and paralyzed on her right side. After a two-year grieving period, she came to the realization that she had to play the cards that she was dealt. And so she decided to reinvent herself and attempt to do all the things that she was famous for doing before her stroke, like gourmet cooking, hosting dinner parties for 12, interior decorating, sewing, and too many other hobbies and activities to mention here. She now basically makes us normal people look like whiners and complainers by continuing to do almost everything she did before her stroke. But in essence, she does it with one arm and one leg tied behind her back, and she might as well have duct tape over her mouth too, since she can't speak. And she does it all with her amazing positive attitude and smile. So what's your excuse for not playing the cards that you were dealt and turning those lemons into lemonade? Dave has been so inspired by Charlene's attitude that it inspired him to reach out to caregivers by writing 3 books and starting this radio program to make sure that caregivers have a place to go to get the support that they need in order to avoid burnout and to get through the grief process. Now get ready to learn how you can avoid burnout and survive grief. It's Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver, here on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. And here again is your host, Dave Nassani.
And we're back, and we're talking with Jane. Jane, are you there?
Yes. Good afternoon.
And we're talking about dementia and Alzheimer's. And the last 10 minutes of the show, let's just discuss some practical tips for caregivers who whose duties are watching their loved ones who have this terrible disease, and some practical tips of how they can survive and not get burned out, and how they can get some help, and how they can even qualify for some help if they can't afford it, and so on.
Yes, there's one respite program through UCLA that they provide $800 as a qualifying thing for families that have been dealing with this and already have in-home caregivers, and they look at the financial need, but it's a program where it's offered every year for families for respite. And it is something where if somebody has a need in the home where I am, I just go to all lengths of searching, finding whatever it is they need. But oftentimes people are told they need around-the-clock care, and it's not something I believe in. It is much better to make sure you get that evening care, because if you can get them to have that calm evening and feel assured when they go to sleep, it just makes a difference. So if somebody only can afford 6 hours a day, that is when you need it, because the rest of the time is going to be easier. And
why is
trying to
more
struggle
difficult?
Alone? The sundowning.
Why is more difficult?
Because it's so common with the sundowning, the agitation, the difficult behavior, the inability to handle the situation, and the often interaction that goes with the spouse of not being able to know what to do when they're trying to get someone to, like, say, take a bath or something. It's just a back-and-forth fight between them, and often lack of communication. So that is the time where most people just want to give up, and they just can't seem to know what to do or how to connect and what works. And I find that that is the time I prefer to visit the home, so I can see what's going on and what the struggles are, and just say, let's try this. Let's not try to force this, because then the option is often giving medication that is so sedating to them that it takes out their drive to want to do something creative, when that's part of their brain that is able to explore, because things that they didn't have an opportunity to do, whether it's photography or writing poetry, they now have that, and that it can be focused on. So if you think about focusing on what a person can do, what a difference it makes in their mind and the ability to cope with the terrifying thing of dementia.
Yeah, that's a pretty tough challenge. What do you recommend for those who don't have the finances? I mean, in my mother's case, I understand we were speaking before, and you had mentioned that hospice has some things that could help, that you don't always have to call hospice if someone's dying, right? You can...
Oh, yes.
Talk about that.
I am surprised about the amount of times I go in a home and they're not even aware of hospice. No one has said anything to them, but they certainly qualify. And it is a team of help. I've been worked hospice nursing, and it's one of the favorite areas of nursing I've done, where it is a social worker, pastor, nurse, home health aide, a team of support. A nurse is on call 24/7. Because it is a challenging thing to continue day after day with the monumental needs of taking care of someone at home. And when they qualify for hospice, you've just added a team of support to help you meet the demands of your day. And often people do cut costs by hiring privately, like off Craigslist or word of mouth. And the unfortunate thing is sometimes they don't know
the
true identity. Well, it does happen a lot of time because they think they're saving money, and they don't even know the real identity of the person because there's no background check. There's no looking at their license to see who they are. There's no one that has liability insurance. And if you've hired privately, someone in the state of California has to be the employer. So if they're injured, the client now is responsible for the workman's comp, but they may be totally unaware of that. because no one is educating the public on this situation. Because when you hire
almost all of these are people who don't even they're not even citizens of this country. They're from foreign countries.
Right. So when then something happens, you don't even know the true identity. You just know the first name. So it's really unsafe to hire that way. They say, well, we'll just get a student. But who's training that student how to take care of you? Who knows the DMV record? Who has liability insurance? Who has bonding on a person that you hired privately, the word of mouth, it's a friend of a friend? And you risk much more. It's not a way to save money, because in the end, your liability is too high. And it's, what if that person is sick? Who's going to replace them?
Yeah. Well, you are so knowledgeable, Jane. How can people get a hold of you if they want to look more into what you offer and see if it can be a good fit?
The number one thing that is the easiest for anyone to do is we tend to all have smartphones. So you go to your app store and put in your search, Preferred Care at Home, and you can download my app for free. And when you have that in your phone, everyone pretty much keeps their phone within 6 feet of them all day long. So
yeah,
you can always have that information available. It gives you all my contact information, social media, so you can know who I am as a person, and you have it accessible all the time. All of us get business cards, lose them, don't remember where we put them,
mm-hmm.
but your phone is handy all the time.
Yeah. And you have a website as well?
Yes. Yes, my app connects you to my website, my Twitter, LinkedIn, Pinterest, business page,
so
Facebook page.
Now what if they don't have a smartphone and they need to, you know, make an old-fashioned phone call, or they just have an old computer without, slow dial-up connection? How can they connect to your website without your app?
Oh, you can just go Google. You know, just go to the Google and put in the Preferred Care, and you will come up with the website. And then most people that are my clients are not used to using computers, so they can just call me, 661-977-5007. 661-977-5007. So any phone, you can put that in your contact so that I am available, because everyone should have a backup plan.
Well, you are an amazing, amazing person, and I am so glad I had you on the show. And I think we're going to have you back again just to do a show on Alzheimer's and dementia. I haven't met anyone as knowledgeable as you who at least let me get back to you on that. Well, I don't have that answer. Let me get back to you on that. But you seem to have all of the answers, and you're so passionate. I really believe that this is what you love to do, and that if things aren't working out, that you would go to any length to make it work, or even give people advice that maybe wouldn't put any money in your pocket, but that would help them as well. That's what I'm kind of feeling. I'm sure I'm right. Yeah.
Yes, you definitely picked up on the essence of who I am. That is my focus, is education, and definitely any way I can help. I don't know all the answers. Yes, I am extremely knowledgeable. I'm very intuitive and perceptive, but I know how to find the answers if I don't know them.
And if somebody wants to be your friend on Facebook, because you share a lot of knowledge on Facebook as well, how can they find you on Facebook? Type in your name, right?
Yeah, so just put in Jane Branham and send me a request, and I'll be happy to be your friend.
And that's Branum, and you will befriend anyone who wants to befriend you, yes?
Yes, if they choose to be friends. I choose to have people around me that are positive and seeking to grow and seeking to have information and be inspired.
Jane, you are a sweetheart, and I thank you so much for coming on the show, and you're so knowledgeable. You're so passionate, and I'm so glad that I got to know you. And I'm going to be calling you for some more resources about my mom and what she's going through. And anybody out there, if you're smart, you will call this woman at least to find out more information on your situation. to find out what's available out there. She's a host of knowledge on the different programs, Medi-Cal. I know we didn't talk about palliative. How do you say that? Palliative care? Yeah. Briefly explain that before I let you go.
Palliative care is sort of like a pre-hospice. It's minimal checks. You only have the nurse visit every 2 weeks, and you're not quite ready to be on hospice, either mentally or your medical condition. But it's a way to keep tabs on you and provide care for the nurse coming to your home. And it's different than home health because it's only the palliative care nurse. It's like you're still seeking aggressive treatment, and we're kind of keeping you in the loop because you may need to go on hospice. So we're going to keep track of you and monitor you every 2 weeks.
Well, that's good. Thank you again, Jane. And you'll be happy to just speak with someone if they want to get more information, no obligation.
Oh, yes. I'd love to talk. I'd love to help people, and I'd love to share with them. So I'm no problem talking to anyone that wants to talk to me.
So please, people out there, don't be shy. Caregivers can tend to be a little shy and hesitate to pick up the phone and suffer through it. No, I don't need any help. You know, caregivers always think they don't need any help. They do need help, because if they don't, they're going to burn out. And if they burn out, they won't be any good to them or their loved ones. So do it now. Don't wait till crisis comes. Don't wait till you lose your temper. Do it now. And thank you again, Jane. And we'll see everybody next Wednesday at noon. Bye-bye. God bless.
Thank you for joining Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Show. Make sure you tune in every Wednesday at noon Pacific, 3 o'clock Eastern, to catch more of Dave and his tips to caregivers on avoiding burnout and surviving the grief process, right here on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network.